Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Psychic Teachers Book Club. I'm your host, Deb Bowen. My co-host, Samantha Fay, is away again today. So it's me and you this morning. And if I sound a little rusty, I'm sorry. I've been screaming all weekend. I do a little acting in community theater and am playing Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And if you are familiar with that show, you know, she screams a lot at the end. So I hope you can hear me and understand me okay today. So I'm so happy that you're with me. I want to focus today on just a few books. Last week I gave you a long smorgasbord of lots of books that have impacted my life and made me who I am in my spiritual journey and in my psychological journey. And today I'm just going to focus on a few books and just three or four authors today in books that impacted not only my spiritual and emotional being, but also really helped me to work towards some of the activism that I think is so important in our world today. So I want to begin with a book that is probably one of the most difficult books I've ever read. To be absolutely honest with you, I've never read the book from cover to cover. I can only take it in little pieces because it takes so much energy to digest what is written in this amazing book. The author is Clarissa Pinkola's Estes. I'll put that in the chat room in just a minute for those of you who are with me in the chat room. Clarissa Pinkola's Estes. And the name of the book is Women Who Run with the Wolves. Dr. Pinkola's Estes is a Jungian analyst, and her work looks at the sacred feminine and looks at feminine in terms of mythology and fairy tales. That's what this book does. And the book is filled with fairy tales and what those mean to women's psychological and spiritual development. Some of the fairy tales are ones that most of us in the Western Hemisphere are quite aware of and have grown up with. Some of them not so commonly known. And one of those is one of the ones I want to focus on in my discussion about this book. In many traditions around the world, interestingly, and I think that's one of the things I love so much about the idea of fairy tales and their meanings to us, is that we have fairy tales that may have some differences but are common to many cultures. And one of those is the tale of the Silkie. Let me write Women Who Run with the Wolves in the chat room, and then I can move on. Okay, so one of the fairy tales in Women Who Run with the Wolves is the story of the Silkie. And the version of that that I grew up knowing about from old folk songs is a tale of a male Silkie who comes to land. But in this book, she tells the tale of a woman, a female Silkie. And here's the legend in an abbreviated version. Silkies appear to be seals in the sea, and they come to land and transform into people by removing their seal skin. And in the story that's told in Women Who Run with the Wolves, this female Silkie comes to land and removes her seal skin so she can just sunbathe on the rocks. And a fisherman steals her seal skin. And when that happens, she is bound to him in this story for 7 years and a day. Again, there's some numerology tied into this story. For 7 years and a day, this Silkie is tied to this fisherman. And she dutifully marries him, as she is bound to do. And they have a child. But all through those 7 years, she longs for the sea. She longs to go back to being the Silkie that she is meant to be. But she can't, because he has hidden her seal skin. And without that, she can't return to the sea that to which she belongs. And so she dutifully follows her wifely responsibilities for those 7 years and a day. And on that day, her child actually finds her sealskin hidden away. And she puts it on, and back into the sea she goes, making a choice to leave her husband and her child. And she knows at some level that her child will be fine, but she has to go back to being herself, who she really intrinsically is. That's what she must do. And so she says, as she goes into the sea, dives deeply into the sea and back to her own people, she says, "When it's time, it's time." And I think that probably most of us have some history in our lives of knowing, a deep internal knowing, when there needs to be a shift in our lives. When it's time, it's time. And I love that story. There was a wonderful movie made about the legend of the Silky some years ago, and it's an obscure little movie about an island called Roane Inish on the Scottish shore, I believe, or maybe Irish shore. So if you get a chance to look that book up, I think it's called The Secret or The Legends of Roane Inish, and it tells the story of a silky that I just love. But Women Who Run With Wolves is filled with stories like that, about inviting women to have an opportunity to look at who they really are, to look at the legends and the myths and the metaphors in which we live our lives. It's just a great book. I really recommend it to you. And I could go on and on and on about it, but I don't want to spend all of my time with you today talking about Women Who Run With Wolves. But I do recommend that if you've not read it, you certainly add it to your reading list. The second author I want to discuss today is Sue Monk Kidd, K-I-D-D. And Sue has written lots of amazing books, but the book that I want to focus on today is called The Dance of the Dissonant Daughter. And that's D-I-S-S-I-D-E-N-T, Dissonant Daughter. Sue is probably best known for her book called The Secret Life of Bees. An amazingly wonderful movie was made of that book. And it, too, deals with the issues of women coming into their own. But The Dance of the Dissonant Daughter by Sue Monk Kidd is her story of her own journey. The subtitle of the book is called A Woman's Journey from Christian Tradition to the Sacred Feminine. And in this book, Sue, who lives in South Carolina, tells her story of having grown up in a very traditional Christian family. She was a writer for Guidepost magazine. She grew up, I think, in the Baptist church. And in her adult life, after having been married for some time and having two children, began to realize that she needed to find something deeper, a deeper meaning for her own life, and particularly her own life as a woman, and for the life of her young daughter. And so she starts attending some different kinds of churches and moving through really a spiritual crisis in her life. And that spiritual crisis drives her to read and to learn and to begin to experience what it's like to be a woman in other cultures, again through myths and fairy tales, again through looking at the world through eyes that were not eyes that she had grown up having. Her journey led her to read an amazing number of works about the sacred feminine. What does that term really mean? Are we talking about goddess worship? Are we talking about the balance of male and female energy within us, as is proposed in the work of psychologist Carl Jung? That's the common thread among all of the books today, is the work of Carl Jung, actually. I hadn't realized that until I had started the show today, but that's true. And Sue Monk Kidd began to go to women's meetings, attend women's consciousness-raising groups. That was back in the days when there were a lot of those right after the women's rights movement began in the 1970s and 80s. And at some point, Sue Monk Kidd goes to Crete and with a group of women and is involved in some rituals of honoring women, honoring motherhood, honoring that sacred feminine. Interestingly, you probably know this, but one of the oldest pieces of art or sacred relics that we have come from prehistoric times, and it's that figure, that very voluptuous clay figure of a woman who is clearly a mother, pendulous breast, big belly, and Sue Monk Kidd begins to follow along in that journey of understanding what that concept of the divine feminine means. And she looks for her in many cultures. Her experience in Crete takes her into a dark cave that becomes symbolic for her of the womb of the mother, the womb of the earth, and her rebirthing of herself. She also makes a trip to Avebury in England. And Avebury is not as well known as Stonehenge, but in Avebury, the standing stones in that town are spread out, not in a circle like at Stonehenge, but spread out throughout the town and really kind of almost into the countryside. And if you look at an aerial view of the stone layout in Avebury, you see the outline of that stereotypical image of the goddess. And Sue realized that Avebury was another way in which her life changed. She began to see herself in a different way with those ancient standing stones. She did several retreats by herself and with a group of women. One of the life-changing experiences she had was walking a labyrinth and conducting some rituals at Springbank Retreat Center, which is run by a group of nuns in South Carolina. It's a beautiful place. And so Sue really spent a lot of time looking for that goddess within, that divine feminine of who she was. And here's what she says about those journeys. We take our journeys and bring back the gifts. We find our hearts and we plant them. We do it as we voice our souls and find our authenticity, and we do it in the quiet enactment of natural spirituality. We do it for ourselves, but also for all our daughters, all the women, all the men, all creation. We do it out of love for the women we are becoming, out of our love for the earth. We do it because we are the change the world is waiting for. I just love that. I love Sue's journey. I love her teaching to us of the way that we can, in whatever way resonates for us. It doesn't have to be Sue's way, but in whatever way we find that finding ourselves, our own femininity, our own connection to the divine resonates for us. And that's the gift of the Dance of the Dissonant Daughter to me from Sue. She does the same thing, interestingly, in The Secret Life of Bees, but with different symbols and in a different way. And, of course, that is couched as a novel, and it's an absolutely beautiful book and an absolutely beautiful movie. So if you are at a place in your life where you're looking to find that spiritual self within you, I hope that today's books are helpful to you in that way. Let me take a break. We're at the halfway point here before I move into the next author I want to discuss and tell you a little bit about who I am and who my co-host is and what we do. My name is Deb Bowen. My co-host normally on the show is Samantha Fay, and we are both psychics. We are spiritual life coaches. We offer a variety of services and products. Our websites are debbowen2bs.com and samanthafey.com. You can reach both of us through our websites, and also on both of our websites, under resources on my website, I'm not sure where on Samantha's, our extensive reading list, and they're always being updated. Our reading lists are always being updated. So you can take a look at some of the books that we recommend to folks to read, and books that either have been or will be discussed on this podcast. So I do hope that you'll learn more about us. Let me put that in the chat room for you. It's DEBBOWEN and Samantha Fey, and it's FEY.com. There we go. So thank you also very much for joining us on this podcast. We also do a podcast on Sunday nights called Psychic Teachers. It airs live on Blog Talk Radio at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. We've been at that podcast for over 5 years, and it's also available for download on iTunes. So we'd be honored, of course, if you would listen to Psychic Teachers and hear some of the information that we share on that podcast as well. More than 70,000 people listen to that podcast every month, so certainly you might be in good company. So do consider joining us for that as well. The next author I want to talk about is Jean Shinoda Bowen. She, too, is a Jungian analyst based in Shinoda. I'm sorry, I'm trying to type and talk at the same time, and I'm not doing a good job of that. Shinoda. Well, Shinoda. I tell you, folks, I'm just not here this morning. My fingers aren't working. Shinoda Bowen, B-O-L-E-N. She is a Jungian analyst in San Francisco, based in San Francisco, although she travels around the world. And Jean, many years ago, Jean's been a prolific writer for many years. She has lots of books out. One of her earliest books is called Goddess in Every Woman. And in that book, Jean looks at the archetypes of Greek and Roman goddesses to invite us to look at those archetypical symbols and what they mean for who we are within ourselves. Some of her more recent books are some of the ones that I want to discuss today. And the one that I'd like to spend the most time on is her book entitled Crossing to Avalon. And in this, the subtitle of this is A Woman's Midlife Quest for the Sacred Feminine, Crossing to Avalon. And in this book, she has reached a crisis in her own life, just as Sue Monk Kidd had done in The Dance of the Dissonant Daughter. Jean had reached a similar crossroads in her life. And through a series of events in her life, had been invited to embark on a pilgrimage of a physical pilgrimage to some sacred places, but that pilgrimage to sacred places, as we all know, also becomes an internal pilgrimage into finding ourselves. And that's certainly what happened to Jean in this book. She is invited to Avalon, which is in southwest England, and spent some time in Glastonbury and had some amazing experiences at the Glastonbury Abbey, at the Chalice Well, at the Glastonbury Tor. And all of those places are very sacred to me as well. I love those places and have had the opportunity to twice visit those places. And in that journey to Avalon, she also goes to some other places across Europe. At some point, she meets the Dalai Lama, actually, at a conference on this trip. But in this process of looking for herself and that divine feminine and that sacred feminine within herself, she begins to understand that all of us have within us the spark of feminine, the spark of divine feminine, and that we are all gods, goddesses to each other. And I use that word loosely in that context. She also says that this finding the goddess within, finding the divinity within ourselves, is also available to men. And I love that. I love that she says that. Here's a quote from Crossing to Avalon. "The sacredness of the earth and the body is felt by some men who also lack words for what they sense in their bodies as holy and are moved to express in some private act of reverence, ritual, or creativity." So she offers this book to men as well. She spends a great deal of time in the book discussing a symbol that is basic to sacred geometry. It is called the Vesica Pisces. And the symbol is in its simplest form, are two interlocking circles. And when the circles are drawn one on top of the other, with the center of them meeting each other, the Vesica Pisces symbol becomes a Christian symbol. It is that simplistic symbol of the fish with just those two interlocking lines. When the symbol is turned on its side and the interlocking circles are vertical, it becomes the symbol of the divine feminine. And probably the most common symbol of that that most folks are aware of is that amazingly beautiful full-body halo around Our Lady of Guadalupe. That's what the Vesica Pisces symbol looks like in its feminine form. That symbol is created in a beautiful iron grill work on the well cover at Chalice Well. And I just love that symbol. It has become, for me, one of the symbols of my connection, both to the tradition I grew up in, the Christian tradition in which I grew up in, and also that connection to the goddess and to the divine feminine. And I love Jean's way of discussing that. So she discusses our notion of our connectedness to the divine and our groundedness to Mother Earth in this book as well. She talks a great deal about other authors and how they influenced her. And here's a sample of that. "I read Clarissa Pinkola Estes' richly metaphoric description of the wild woman in Women Who Run With the Wolves and recognized that she was the goddess in another of her myriad manifestations and names." Pinkola Estes, and I'm quoting Jean Bowen, quoting Clarissa Pinkola Estes here. "The wild woman is the source of the feminine. She is all that is of the instinct of the worlds both seen and hidden. She is the basis. She is ideas, feelings, urges, and memory." I love that. I love the connection in these books. So Jean Shinoda Bolen's book, Crossing to Avalon, isn't just a book about midlife crisis. It's a book about all of us finding within ourselves what is divine, however we may conceptualize it. I love that book. Much later, Jean wrote a book entitled Urgent Message from Mother: Gather the Women, Save the World. And out of this book came Jean's attempt with the United Nations to reinstate the Year of the Woman, to bring attention to horrible plights of women around the world, how they are marginalized, how they are treated, and how the idea of the divinity of femininity, not just women per se, but the divinity of women in general, can really save this planet. And I truly believe this. Out of the Urgent Message from Mother, this book, came her millionth circle concept. And I bet years ago, many of you read The 100th Monkey. You read that idea of how there can be a quantum shift in thinking and actions in mass of people. And so Jean has created a program called the Millionth Circle Model. And it's where people, men and women, gather around the world to talk about and to become active in making and affecting large-scale changes and small-scale changes, both within our own community and in the larger world community. That's her intent in Urgent Message for Mother and in her Millionth Circle movement. And some years ago, I created a circle here in our community in collaboration with a wonderful organization. If you're not familiar with it, it's called Grandmothers for Peace. It's an international organization. And together we affected some change in our community and continue to be involved in statewide and some national activities as well, bringing the intent of bringing peace and harmony around the world. And in Jean Shinoda Bolen's book, Urgent Message from Mother, she quotes one of my most favorite poems in the whole world, and the poem is by Alice Walker. And I'd like to share it with you. And it's appropriate today, given that we're one day past Mother's Day. We have a beautiful mother. Her hills are buffalo. Her buffalo's hills. We have a beautiful mother. Her oceans are wombs. Her wombs, oceans. We have a beautiful mother. Her teeth, the white stones at the edge of the water. The summer grasses, her plentiful hair. We have a beautiful mother, her green lap immense, her brown embrace eternal, her blue body everything we know. I just love that poem. Thank you, Alice Walker, for writing that poem, and thank you, Jean Shinoda Bolen, for copying it into this book. So, I really do recommend that you take a look at this wonderful book. If the idea that, gosh, you'd like to do something about the world situation, she gives you some great concrete ideas. She gives you some stories of people around the world who have, in fact, affected major, beautiful changes in their community, in their world. I think more than anything else, perhaps this book gives me hope. I find this book to be very hopeful that while terrible things are going on with women and girls around this world, there is still hope. There is still the belief that each of us can pull from somewhere deep within ourselves that loving, nurturing part of ourselves and make changes for the betterment of all beings on this planet. And I love that about Jean Shinoda Bolen. I hope that you have enjoyed today's program. I hope that the discussion of these books in terms of the divine feminine and our connection to Mother Earth have been helpful to you. I hope you'll read the books. I hope you'll let me know about it so that you can have some more conversation about this. Pass this on to other people. I'm not sure what our topics will be next week. Samantha will be back with me, and we look forward to having you with us. Please feel free to contact us and give us your thoughts and ideas, and we look forward to hearing from you and hope you have a blessed week and be the light. Goodbye, everyone.